Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Ooh, welcome back, sports fans, to another episode of the Charity Stripe Podcast, brought to you by the Believe Podcast Network, the number one sports podcast network in Los Angeles. For those listening at home, on the road, in the air, or in the water, do you believe? We have a great show for you guys today. New world record holder just tied the world record with a 55 on the course. Alexander Hughes joins the boys, absolutely crushing the golf game. So get excited, tuck it into your waistband, because here we go. 3, 2, 1. We're back.
We sitting here, I'm supposed to be the franchise player, and we're in here talking about practice.
Clock at 5. Pass is intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Rebound box. Back out to Allen. His three-pointer. Bang! Tie game!
Gives it to Jenkins for the championship. He's going for the corner. He's got it.
Bases loaded. Two out.
Baby, it's the Charity Stripe. Hit your free throws, cause they're free. So 270 coming hot at you guys, then so 269, and I'm joined by the boys on this one, and Alexander Hughes, who had one of the all-time days out on the course. He talks that 55 moment and a whole lot more. His quest for the PGA Tour included really, really interesting stuff, guys. We're pumped for you to take a listen to the show. But before we get into that, did somebody say playoffs? The NBA, MLB, and NHL are in full swing, and our partners at Bet Online have you covered. So, take full advantage of sports being back and get in on the action with hundreds of odds, futures, and props for you to bet on. And there is always the online casino as well. It never closes. So head to betonline.ag today and sign up to receive your welcome bonus on your first deposit. Again, that's betonline.ag. Sign up today. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Go to BetOnline. Really great people. We've gotten to meet them, so I could say that firsthand. And you know I wouldn't lie to you guys, right? I wouldn't tell falsehoods about people. So they're really good over there at betonline.ag. The online casino. It's great stuff. You guys know I'm a sucker for the online blackjack. You could tell me it's rigged. I don't care. I'm still going to do it. It's a lot of fun. But without further ado, enough about my gambling habits. The Charity Stripe boys with golfer Alexander Hughes. Enjoy.
What's up? Can you guys hear me?
Yeah, we got you.
Better looking Hughes.
The better looking, more talented Hughes, brother. That's that's what we wanted, man. How are you, dude?
What's up? I'm good. How are you guys?
Good. In the peach tree hat, Josh. San Diego hat's Nick. Backwards hat is Alex, but we call him Toss.
All right, perfect.
Yeah, super easy. We'll just chat about whatever the hell you just threw down last week. And then, yeah, man, we'll go from there, talk a bit about you, getting your pro career going, and all that good stuff.
Sounds like a plan.
Awesome. I'll give you a little introduction. All right, guys, you heard it at the top of our show. We have Alexander Hughes, golfer, joining us. Alex just threw down a world record of 55 on a course last weekend. You got to talk
to Guinness World Record.
Guinness World, yeah. Talk to us. What's A, going through your mind, and B, how in the world you do that?
It's just kind of one of those things that you never expect to happen. but it's always in the back of your mind as a good player. You always think you can birdie pretty much every single hole you play once you get to a certain point in your career. But yeah, it was just kind of a normal day, just going out there to practice with a little guy named Grant Gudgell. And he was playing an Oklahoma Junior Golf Tour event over the weekend. So I was trying to help him around the course a little bit, just show him around kind of what it takes to, you know, shoot a good score on that course. And yeah, it was just pretty surreal. I just kind of got it going early and then just try to keep the ball rolling.
So you went to go show this kid just like the ropes, like, yeah, this is how we do this. And then you just pretty much yammed in his face. That's how it went down.
I mean, like in a nice way. Yeah. He was freaking out the whole time, but he was just such a good kid to play with. Mm-hmm. You know, he kept me pretty cool, calm, and collected, you know, there towards the end, just because he was such a nice kid to talk to. Mm-hmm. So it was nice.
And he's keeping your score, right, the whole time? So you were really not looking
at
you
got. Yeah, he was keeping my score the whole time. So he was letting me know what I was at pretty much all times.
Were you aware of the record as you were golfing?
Well, yeah, I always knew the record because Rain Gibson went to Oklahoma Christian and I went to Central Oklahoma. So they're like 10 minutes apart from each other's schools, maybe 15. So I knew the record in the back of my head, but I didn't really think about it until probably, I'd say 17. After I made the birdie putt on 17 and I went to 18, that's when I really thought about that. If I eagled the last, the par five, that I would shoot 54 and break the record. And yeah, so that was the first moment where I really thought to myself, like, holy, I can do kind of something special that no one's ever done before if I eagle the last, but sadly birdied it, sadly.
Oh, just the birdie.
you still tie it. I mean, going to the clubhouse, what was that like holding that card, having to tell the people there that you just did this?
Yeah, you know, what I told some of the other people I had interviews with is that it's just such an awkward thing because I had tied the course record at a couple courses before, but I'd never beaten a course record.
Yeah.
And so I went inside and I had an idea that it was 59. My buddy Brendan Jelly from Oklahoma State shot 59 out there. And so I knew that 59 was probably still the record, but I wasn't 100% positive. So I kind of just go into the pro shop, see the assistant pro, and I'm like, hey, what's your course record? Is, you know, because I knew that I had it, but I just wanted to be, you know, not to be a dick about it.
You can let the language fly, buddy. You're good. No hold bar.
But yeah, so I pretty much was trying not to be a dick, and I just said, hey man, what's your course record? And he said 59. And I go, oh, I think I broke it. Like in my head, I know I did break it, but I was just trying to be a nice guy about it. And he goes, what'd you shoot? And I go, 55. And that's when kind of the mayhem started with all the guys in the pro shop.
That's so funny.
Yeah, I got some witnesses and they can vouch for me. And so, yeah, that's kind of when it all started.
So is that, like you said, you've tied some other course records. Is the first sentiment that these guys have is skepticism, like every single time, where it's like, there's no way you did it?
A little bit. I mean, some of the pro shop guys knew me in there. So, I don't think they doubted it, but I mean, shooting a 55, even on a course like South Lakes, South Lakes is known as to be one of the easier golf courses in Tulsa, to say the least, but the greens, it's always in good condition. Like the guys keep it in great shape, the maintenance crew. So it's fun to go play and, you know, try to shoot a really low number out there. But 55, whenever you say 55, like people always try to call you on your BS right there. Yeah, so yeah, he definitely hesitated for a second, the assistant pro. But
I'm assuming you've golfed there before. What's the lowest that you've shot there before that?
At that course, I've shot 61 out at 6. That was my previous low.
Wow.
And then you changed your breakfast. and then the next thing you know, you're rolling. I mean, you said it so modestly, like, good for you. I would, if I knew the thing was 59 and I shot a 55, I would have just thrown the card down, lit a cigarette, put it out on the thing and walked out the door and been toast.
Threw your nuts on the table.
Literally, that's just how I roll.
I mean, it was such a weird thing to approach. First of all, like I said, the kid was keeping my score, so I didn't even have the scorecard. And so he was keeping the score. And then this other, the two other random guys we played with, And one of the guys' name is actually Hunter Shanks.
Mm-hmm.
And John Wagner is the
it's an unfortunate last name for a golfer.
That's a bad, yeah.
Terrible. But they were keeping score as well. I had no idea that they were keeping score. I just thought the kid was keeping score. And yeah, so I just pretty much was like, yeah, the kid's got the scorecard. We can, you know, go through the holes, make sure everything's right before we make it official. And so the kid didn't want his scorecard to be the actual scorecard that, you know, was hung up and took, because he said he didn't have the best handwriting, which I didn't think it was that bad. I thought it was pretty good compared to mine.
Yeah.
But yeah, so he pretty much, that kid came in, he threw down the scorecard and he was the one hyping me up.
That little, you got, yeah, now you have a gas man. That's awesome.
Yeah, I had a little hype man behind me, so it was nice.
So he's 14, right?
He's 14, Stillwater High School.
That's so awesome.
It's just like one of those things where, you know, you remember being a kid and like when you're competing, it's so different than competing 10 years later, right? You're 24 years old now.
Yep.
Can you just talk about like the mental difference between where you were in high school and in college and where you are now and like how that's taking you? And I read something that, you know, now you feel a lot more motivated and a lot more sure of yourself going into, you know, to compete and to make these cuts.
Yeah, it's, you know, the difference, I think when I was younger, you kind of just, you know, a guy like me and my whole family, my brother, my sister, we all played sports growing up. And so we're super competitive. So I didn't take golf as seriously as I probably should have. It definitely was my primary sport, but I didn't put it all, you know, my chips into golf when I was younger, like I probably should have. But to say, I think my mindset kind of whenever I got into college and just kind of progressed as a player, I started to realize that I could do something with this sport, especially in my later years of college when I started to play well and win a couple tournaments. Yeah, I think the progression is just, it's fantastic for my mindset right now. I think in the last 2 to 3 months, I've made great swing improvements. And I think it's just the beginning for me. I feel like I got the talent to be on the PGA Tour. I know I have the talent, I should say. It's just a matter of doing it at this point. Yeah. I'm a longer hitter. I'm, you know, always going to be on the longer hitter, you know, between 330, 350. So I know that length can compete on the PGA Tour. It's just a matter of doing it at this point. And so, yeah, this gives me a huge confidence boost, and I'm just ready for what's next.
Nice.
Yeah, that was gonna be my next question is what's next? I mean, you just answered.
Yeah,
it,
right? I mean, next is, I mean, with Q School being canceled, that sucks.
Yeah.
For Korn Ferry, but is what it is. You know, you just gotta. I mean, everyone's kind of trying to adjust right now, so you just kind of try to take in strides and just keep going. Keep a positive state of mind. But yeah, I'm planning these APT Tour events. It's All Pro Tour. Bunch of really great players who have status, don't have status on Korn and whatever other tours that are out there. They play in these events and it just kind of keeps your game sharp and the payouts are good. It's top heavy. But yeah, that's just kind of what I'm doing right now. I'm going to stick to the APT Tour and then do some Korn Ferry Monday qualifiers, you know, and then try to maybe get some exemptions into those. But yeah, that's kind of the progress for right now. Just keeping a positive state of mind, keeping the game sharp, and whenever my time's ready, just go and perform.
Yeah. Do you have to, for just so people know what these tours are and these, you know, qualifiers are, how many do you have to win to get your PGA card, or do you have to just be placing really well and they give it to you for Korn and all these other tournaments you're in?
Well, APT doesn't get you any status, actually. No status on the Korn or anything. That could change in the future. It's a tour that's definitely, it's considered the biggest mini tour in the country. And that can definitely change for the future. They give you exemptions into other events that are pretty big time.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's no status entry for Korn Ferry. It's not affiliated with the PGA Tour right now, technically. But there's definitely a lot of avenues. I mean, the best avenues to get on the Korn is for a guy that, you know, you can't go to Q School right now, which is the best route to get on the Korn Ferry Tour and, you know, build your way up, because there's no way to get directly to the PGA Tour from the pretty much our level. There's, unless you Monday do a pre-qual and then do a Monday qualifier. So you have to get through the two qualifiers and then you can get into the PGA Tour event, which I'll do a couple of those. So, yeah, hopefully I can get through those two stages and make a PGA Tour event. But, yeah, it's just the process right now. I mean, there's a lot of incredible mini tour players out there that, you know, have the talent to be on the PGA Tour Corn Ferry. I mean, it's just, I would say there's like 20 guys from the APT class from last year who are on the Corn Ferry / PGA Tour this year. So it's just a good building ground.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a place to keep your game really sharp. They run a fantastic tour. You know, I'm in a blessed place to be able to play with guys who are going to be progressing just like I am.
And that elevates your, I assume that elevates your game playing with good guys around you. And it makes,
oh, 100%.
Yeah.
And I'm sure your confidence right now is at an all time high. I mean, I'm sure you're so anxious to kind of just get out there every single day and just keep it going. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty much just, you know, I was kind of in grind mode. I say about 4 months ago, I started to really get into grind mode and I started to think about my swing and how I can develop into a swing that can sustain itself for many years on a professional tour, whatever it may be, European tour, PGA tour, in the next coming year. So I really tried to just grind that out with myself and a few coaches and just think about what it really takes to be, because there's at every single level, there's always a next level that you kind of have to hit.
Right.
As an athlete. So whatever your level is like right here, you can't just continue to do the same stuff you're doing right here, even though you had success right here. You kind of have to level up a little bit and then just kind of keep progressing. So I've done that with like working out, developing my body, keeping myself, you know, lean and strong, and just really making sure that, you know, I have everything at my disposal to, you know, have a successful career in the next couple years.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Do you have a mentor or anyone that, you know, has shaped your career?
Oh yeah. The person that shaped my career the most is Janice Gibson. My first ever coach, from the First Tee of Tulsa. So she's the director out there at the First Tee of Tulsa. And, you know, she was the first one to give me lessons at 9 years old and started to tell me, you know, I had a talent in the sports. And as a young, dumb kid, I really didn't take it that serious. But doing other sports like basketball and soccer and, you know, all the other sports, I really didn't take it that serious when I was younger. But now with the life lessons that she's taught me, I mean, I can always call her and just kind of vent about pretty much anything, because she's just kind of a legend around the Oklahoma parts as being just a person that understands the game incredibly well. You know, she was on the LPGA tour for a number of years and she's like my second mom. That's the best way to describe it. And she's just taught me so much. I mean, that's just that she's definitely my biggest mentor. I mean, next to my mom, dad, grandparents and all of them, but in terms of golf, she's definitely like up there as my biggest mentor.
And you listed the sports you played. Football, not in the cards for you, which is interesting because your big bro was a guard for the starting guard for Oklahoma. So the people know he's
also, this is the first, I think we've had siblings on the show.
Yeah, man. It's the first time we've had siblings on your brother's a brick house. But you didn't play football growing up. He did. Behemoth. Did you play football growing up at all or no?
No, I didn't play football.
Interesting.
Technically, you know, I went to Bishop Kelly my freshman year, and then I went to Edison for my last 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I was supposed to play at Bishop Kelly my freshman year and, you know, went through pretty much everything and just kind of decided not to last second because, I don't know. It was just kind of, I wanted to play basketball and I had an injury in eighth grade where I dislocated my kneecap. And so, and that shit was so gross. I mean, I was like, man, if a helmet hits me right on the kneecap, that thing's going out again, no doubt.
Gone. Yeah.
So I kind of just thought to myself, I went through the scrimmages and, you know, kind of went through everything leading up to it. I was just like, nah, I can't do it. I was going to be a quarterback and play for Bishop Kelly. And I just couldn't go through with it.
Yeah.
I couldn't go through the process that it was about to take. And I love football. You know, my JP and my grandpa and my dad, they always wanted me to play football. But, you know, whenever I got those x-rays on my knee in eighth, ninth grade, it just wasn't in the cards. I would have had to really protect my knees. And yeah, it's definitely a sad part of my life because football is just like in our family. It's just been such a, it's been such a big part with my grandfather being on the national championship team for Oklahoma. And then, you know, having such praise at OU, just being, you know, hiring Barry Switzer. And there's a huge lineage in our family whenever it comes to football, but, I'm hoping I can make a name in golf and kind of switch it up a little bit, you know?
Yeah. Do your own thing.
Start your own legacy. Yeah.
That's right.
How did you, what's the process for choosing a school? Like, because we all know the football process, you know, you, the top guys will choose like Oklahoma. If they really smart, they'll choose Texas, so on and so forth. But the, we're all UT guys, by the way, the, I don't know if JP told you, but what's it like for golf? Like, does it matter? Because in baseball, it really doesn't matter where you go. You could, guys kind of could go anywhere.
Yeah, it's golf is definitely, you know, as a guy like me, in high school, I was not focusing as much as I should have on golf. I was super streaky. You know, I had scores between 78 and 62 in tournaments. And so I had a couple tournaments where, you know, I shot 64 or lower in some junior events, but then I had other tournaments where I was super consistent. I shot like 78 75, and so I had some D1 offers to go some places, but it just didn't, you know, with golf, they typically for Division 1, Division 2, they only allow, it's between like 4 and 5 full scholarships for each team. So it's not like football. Like, you don't get a full, you know, a bunch of full rides for each team. Golf, it's very, you know, the funding is very minimal. So I was looking at it from like a school standpoint. I wanted to make sure I got my degree. I wanted to make sure I got a lot of my college paid for. And I could have gone to a Division I school, like Denver University, that they recruited me, and a couple other ones, and got a minimal scholarship. Like, you know, I think my Denver University was like, you know, 20-30% or something like that. But UCO was giving me a really great scholarship on the higher end, you know. So I didn't have to worry about student debt whenever I came out. I just would be able to play golf and still be able to, we played in some Division I events at UCO. So it was just really stress-free for me, helped more beneficial for my family. And I knew I still was going to play against great talent. So I kind of had to put my ego aside a little bit because, you know, as a, you still want to go D1. I mean, I'm not going to BS that. I obviously was thinking in my head, like, I should go D1. But my game hadn't progressed enough yet. And I wasn't consistent enough. And even though I had a few D1 offers, I was like, you know, I want to go to a school where I'm going to play immediately and I'm going to be able to progress my game right off the bat and just become a better player. And we played at Gilardia Country Club in Oklahoma City, which is just a sweet track that I knew that could really help my game. And my coach, Pat Bates, who recruited me, he understood my talent and knew how to kind of hone it in and craft it. So I really trusted him as a mentor.
Yeah. I mean, that's a really smart thing that I think that you realize, you know, mature thing that you realize when you're younger, that, you know, going D1 right away isn't always the best thing for an athlete. I mean, we talked to a coach for the Last Chance U community college school a month ago, and all these kids, I want to go D1. You don't always, it's not always the right path for you, you know? And I think that you made the smart decision. I mean, getting most of your college paid for, but also getting you to the point where you need to be able to shoot like you are now.
Yeah.
100%.
I mean, I think, Josh, you mentioned we're all Longhorns, and Texas has a very good. It's a very good golf program. But if you were to go to Texas out of state, it's a pretty penny to go to that school if you're not on a full ride or some sort of scholarship. And you know, there's, if you're a middle of the pack type of player on that team, and you can't earn that full scholarship, and you're competing, you're getting better, and then you graduate from you're still an amateur and you want to make that money to pay for your student loans. That's like, that's a lot to pay off. It's a lot of money. And, you know, that puts extra pressure, extra external pressure on you to win every single tournament to get the purse. And it's like, or to even make pro, right? To even try and get in that position. And that's tough. So I think that, yeah, you're like a wise sage owl at the age of 24 here, man. This is pretty crazy.
Yeah, it is interesting. Yeah. I don't think I would have made that decision. It's like, well, I'm pondering. Like, I'm looking back at my 18-year-old self.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if I would have made that call, which is wildly interesting.
I had some help. I had some help for sure because, you know, I definitely didn't – I didn't make the decision on my own. I had some help from I think the decision – the person that actually really persuaded me to go to UCO was actually a guy by the name of – he's the coach for Baylor University, and his name is Mike McGraw. And he's a legend in the golfing coach world. Like he's incredible. It just an unbelievable person. Just another one of my great mentors growing up. And he went to UCO and was a great player in his own right. And he gave me a phone call. We talked for about an hour my senior year. And I was just like, you know, do I go to UCO? Do I go to one of these other schools? And he was a good friend with Pat Bates, my coach. And he said, I think you go to UCO, Alexander. And he just explained that pretty much what we were just talking about right there, that whole process of, you know, you might not be the most talented right now, but if you go to this school and you play immediately, you can progress your game, understand how it works to play in really competitive tournament mode. And just and get the experience that you need, because a lot of guys will go to a big time school like Texas, like OSU, you know, the big time golf schools, and they won't play. And they could go to pretty much any other school in the country and play immediately.
Yep.
And it's kind of like an ego thing. And, you know, they've wanted to go there their whole lives. But college golf, a lot of it's politics, to be honest. Mm-hmm. It's just, you know, especially Division One. I mean, a lot of guys get the short end of the stick sometimes. But that's just the way it works. There's so many good players. I mean, you can't blame coaches or whoever else may be like on making decisions for teams. And it's just the way it is, because you got incredible talents like Matt Wolf and Victor Hovland for Oklahoma State. I mean, you look at the five guys behind them on the bench, Hayden Wood, who was in the five on and off, Nick Heinen, Brennan Jelly, you know, those guys are kind of rotating in and out. Austin Ekro, who's now just becoming a stud in his own right. Any of those guys are probably all of them are going to be on the PGA Tour. They're just that good. And that's just kind of what you get with golf. You just don't get to see sometimes all the talent that's on each team, because there's just an insane amount of guys who don't get the recognition they deserve. And because they go to a big time school and they don't get to play because we only got five spots for each tournament.
Yeah, we see in other sports too. Guys just pop up. You mean like you look at like a guy like Josh Allen, right? He falls under everyone's radar. He's a Cali kid too, a Cali quarterback, under everyone's radar. And next thing you know, out of Wyoming, he's the 7th overall pick. Carson Wentz. Like
Carson Wentz. Yeah.
It's wild.
And you're talking about like as you progress as a golfer, leveling up is really important, right? Getting better and continuing to like push yourself to get better is really important. Is it similar to other sports where like if a basketball player wanted to get better from one season to another, he might look at other basketball players and say, okay, this is what this guy does attacking the basket. And I'm going to practice, you know, ball screen drills till the cows come home. And that's how I'm going to get better. And that's going to be like the skill that I add in my bag. Is it similar when you're playing golf where you look at other players and you're like, what he's doing, his approach in, you know, on the green is like, or is it just so individual that you can't even look at how another guy plays and bring that into your skill set?
I think you definitely take little pieces of other people's game that you are able to play with or even see on TV or Instagram or whatever it may be. I mean, I'd be lying if I said I didn't, you know, look at DJ Dustin Johnson and didn't take a few of his, you know, little routines and things that he does to kind of progress his game. Cause I model my game a lot around his game.
And oddly enough, you guys are both on fire right now.
Yeah. I'm hoping to get to his point at some point. So.
Did I hope to.
It's definitely 100%. I mean, I can't disagree with that. You're always trying to level up. You're always trying to progress your game. I think that goes with any sport. If you're starting to get to that professional level, it's a different. High school to college was a different thing, but college to pros, I mean, any level you get to the pros, guys really don't mess up on any level. And they've worked for that. They've worked for those moments, whatever it may be, in preparation, meditation, changing their body, anything from a mental to a physical standpoint, they're doing what it takes to
achieve
their goals.
And you hear that a lot.
You see that. In the.
Like, you hear that a lot with, like, NFL guys and NBA guys, and you always say, like, what's the difference, you know? And it's like, those guys are just on another level. Like, you know, we had Victor Cruz on a couple of weeks ago, and he was saying, like, the transition from college to NFL is just ridiculous because the talent is just – everyone around you is the best.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone around you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that's the ego thing that every athlete goes through is that I think a lot of college kids – high school kids especially, and then college, and then to the pros, there's like that ego of, oh, I'm the best player that there is because they're the best player in their hometown or whatever it may be. And so they just don't think about the bigger picture of, you know, having that, you know, the Mamba mentality, the Kobe mentality of there's someone out there who's working probably harder than I am right now and is going to struggle to the end of, you know, until their last breath to get to that top podium. I mean, that's just bottom line.
Mm-hmm.
So just understanding that and honing that in. And I will say from a realistic standpoint, I didn't have that mentality for like a really long time. And I'm just now progressing into that, understanding what I'm capable of. But I think that's what all athletes kind of need to understand, you know, for other guys in other sports, whatever it may be, any competitive sport that there is. You got to understand that it takes a lot of guts and a lot of sacrifice to be at the top. I mean, Kobe Bryant is the best example you'd ever give of that.
Yeah, it happens in a lot of almost any profession, really, or in even a scholastic setting. You go to your high school, right,
mm-hmm.
and you're the smartest kid in your high school. You roll into Cornell, guess what? Everyone at Cornell is the smartest kid in their high school.
Yeah.
You know, you come out to Los Angeles to be an actor. Like, yeah, I'm the best actor in my high school, and cool people are talented, but you get out here and guess what? Everyone was the best in their high school, and there's a lot of high schools in America. It's definitely something going across the board. You talked about that earlier, how the past 4 months you really hit that grind. How strict is your daily routine?
It's really strict now. You know, working out for an hour and a half, making sure I practice for at least 2 to 3 hours before playing, and – That's pretty much been the strict grind, making sure I'm eating correctly, just getting on that routine that's going to, you know, progress myself from a physical and mental standpoint. Like I talked about, it's process. Process is a big thing that I am developing right now and will continue to develop, because if you don't enjoy the process of getting to where you want to be, you're not going to get to the top.
Mm-hmm.
The process is something that as an athlete you should enjoy, because to be a realist, you might not make it. I mean, that's just the truth. You might not. But if you enjoy the process and you give it your all, I mean, to the hell with it, because that's kind of what it's all about. You know, you can at least at the end of the day, when you do decide to hang it up, and if it didn't work out, you can tell yourself, you know what, at least I tried. I respected the process. I grinded it out and it just didn't work out for me. And you can have pride in that.
And at least I hold the Guinness World Record too.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, that's what all my friends are giving
it's not
me
bad.
About that. I'm going to hate that in the future.
Did you,
I think
you
you'll like
Ryan?
It. That's.
Do you know Ryan? Do you know him?
Who?
Ryan.
Ryan.
Oh, is it Rain?
Look at me.
Look at me. I don't even know who I'm talking about.
Rain Gibson,
I've met him one time before.
Yeah.
But it was just brief. it was, you know, he's a pretty big time guy now.
It's crazy you guys came from the same place and like shot the same score. It's crazy.
It's crazy.
What do you have in the water over there?
I don't know. I mean, honestly, like it's just, it's incredible because it's so funny. I think Rain was talking about the same thing whenever he shot the 55. He just really wasn't thinking about the world record because I think previously before him, a couple other people claimed to shoot 55, but it was never documented and they were either playing alone or whatever it may be. And he was just talking about how when you're in the zone like that, you just don't really think about it. And I got the same thing. I just was in the zone. I wasn't thinking about anything at all. I was just thinking about just continuing to hit good shots, go one shot after the other, and just try to keep making birdie putts. That was kind of my only thing in my head.
Did he reach out after? And like, have you guys connected since you hit the record?
We haven't talked on the phone or anything, but I think he's responded in other ways. I'm not 100% sure if he's contacted any of my coaches or anything like that, but I know a bunch of people like DM'd him and like sent stuff to him on Twitter, but my Twitter, I haven't had a Twitter since like 2015.
Don't get so, it. Yeah. Just, the Twitter is depressing. You don't need it.
I know.
I don't get it.
Go back now.
I'm a Twitter fan.
I got Twitter this past year, and it's like, first of all, it's a great source of news, to be honest. You really get a lot of your news there, but the news is so intense, so it's like a double-edged sword. I'm like, dang, man, like I'm getting so informed.
Too much?
Yeah, my head's
I mean, it's a bad year to start Twitter.
It was a bad year to start Twitter, for sure. Yeah. And Rain's probably, he probably hasn't contacted you. He's probably at the course you were at trying to smash that 55 now, getting competitive over there.
He probably can. He's elite. I mean, if you got a guy who's on the PGA Tour for a while, so.
Yeah. A couple more questions for you, man. What's the one thing you're really working on your game right now? The one thing you're trying, and is it a one thing, or either are you trying to get multiple things going, or is it a one thing at a time focus to like, kind of elevate your game?
There's definitely a couple things that I'm pretty much focusing on right now. And that's short game. I mean, if you look at any player inside the top 100 in the world golf rankings, they are incredible inside of 100 yards. And that's just the difference right there. If you look at guys who are at the top of the list on any tour, they're going to be, you know, elite whenever it comes from inside 100 yards, up and down ratio, sand saves, whatever it may be. They're just, they may not make it the prettiest. I mean, the top guys are going to be, you know, that elite. Rory McIlroy's, Dustin Johnson, John Rahm, they pretty much do everything correct. But you look at the guys anywhere inside the top 100, you know, they may not be the best ball strikers. They may not be, you know, the longest hitters. But, man, inside of 100 yards, they know what the hell they're doing. And that's pretty much what separates any golfer from being at the bottom of the list to the top of the list. Inside 100 yards it's crucial, knowing those yardages.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, anybody could go to Top Golf and hit that back net. Yeah.
Like can you, Josh?
That's my point. I've done it. Like, and like, I'm like 50-50 on like, can I even hit? Like, sometimes I miss the ball. You know what I'm saying? And yeah. I still can like muster the strength to get that thing going. But that touch and finesse, I mean, it's again, like going back, just comparing it to other sports. Because golf, you know, it's so different than basketball. But then there is that kind of level of, you know, having that touch, having that finesse, and not just clunking it off the backboard. You know, you see a guy kind of take it, like Toss is a huge Mavs fan. And we watch like all the Mavs games in our house. And just watching Luka Doncic kind of have that soft touch versus him just running to the rack, using his body and like, you know, kind of trying to draw a foul or throwing it up. But he has that floater down to a tee and inside 15 feet of the basket. That guy's magic.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's pretty much with any sport. You got to have, I think, you know, some coaches will tell you different, that it's, you know, it may not be real, but to every athlete who's been there, I think they can all agree that feel is definitely real. And it plays a huge part in how you play your game because everyone's feel is different. I mean, you can hit a lot of different shots in golf. You can hit a lot of different, you know, trages in basketball. you know, there's a lot of ways to get the golf ball in the hole. There's a lot of ways to get the, you know, the basketball in the basket. So it's just a matter of crafting your own game and understanding that there's a lot of great, in terms of golf, there's a lot of great hitters out there. I mean, you look pretty much the top 5,000 top professional golfers in the world. Mm-hmm. Every single one of them is probably hitting over 300 yards and can consistently hit it in the center of the club face every single time. I mean, that's not rare at all. But you look at guys who are, you know, 75% or above inside of 50 yards. That's rare in terms of professional golf, just being consistent. You look at a guy like Jordan Spieth, who's been struggling as of late, but he's still elite whenever it comes to inside of 100 yards. He's just been, you know, his putter hasn't been the best to him, but he's going to be back on top because he respects the process. And that's the big thing, is respecting the process. Guys who are working at it every single day to get through the slumps that they're in, because you're not an athlete if you haven't been through a slump, you know, once or twice in your career. But progressing through that and getting better from that slump is what it takes to become, you know, elite at the next level, whatever it may be, if you're going from high school, college, professional.
You just emotions, do you use them or you lose them on the course? Like, what's your
good question?
Yeah, I would say I used to be like a super fiery player.
Yeah.
To say the least, I was very aggressive and I had the tendency to throw some clubs when I was younger, but my mom and Janice Gibson, the first lady that I was talking about, they got that out of my head pretty quick. They said that you're not going to play this game and throw clubs. So
McEnroe to really Borg transition.
Yes. you got to use that sometimes. You know, bringing back in John Rahm, a guy like that, you know, he uses his emotions to progress his game. I mean, he gets mad and he starts playing better and better. That's just kind of his attitude. And you got to kind of love that a little bit, because I'm not going to get rid of that fieriness. You know, I'm always going to have that to a certain degree, that aggressiveness, that willingness to take the shot that a lot of people aren't going to take. I think that's super important for getting to the top. You got to have some sort of kind of competitive edge that puts you above the rest.
Mm-hmm. John Rahm.
So just kind of like harnessing that as a motivating tool instead of like having it hinder you and like letting it control the next shot and like you swinging too hard or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's not being like detrimental, but being as something that will boost you up for the next shot, golf or whatever it may be for sports. I mean, for an athlete, you just got to have that fire. That's just, it's not going to be something that's negative, but something that really can just fuel the fire for whatever comes next.
Yeah. I mean, that's why Josh said I was a Mavs fan. Nick's a Clippers fan. His team he's kind of a Clippers fan, but his team took down.
Kind of a Clippers fan. Well, can't do that to me.
But Kawhi Leonard, that's why Kawhi Leonard scares the shit out of me, because he like isn't like that, and there's not many guys at that top tier of athlete who are like that, and he like doesn't blink and he's still amazing. But there are some golfers who are like that too, where they're at the top of the game, top 10 in the world, and they just aren't as emotional as a guy like John Rahm, where they just don't show it. I mean, it's internal, right? They're working through it, but that's just an interesting thing about golf that I think that like people who haven't played the game, they go and pick it up and try and play. It's so frustrating. So to like hear that, it's also frustrating sometimes for you too.
Oh yeah.
A guy, it's refreshing. It's refreshing.
Yeah.
No, I mean, you're lying to yourself if you haven't had a moment where the game is incredibly frustrating. I haven't shot 55s my whole life. I mean, this is just a one day thing that happened. I've had multiple struggles throughout my life with golf, and you know, referring to Kawhi Leonard, I think he, you know, if you break down his game and you slow everything down, yeah, he doesn't show a lot of emotion, but you show him like driving into the paint, you slow down that image right there of him, you know, breaking for a cut or whatever it may on the baseline. you know, he's got that like stank face a little bit. Yeah. That a lot of athletes have, where it's just like, he might not be showing it in, you know, in the moments where he's just kind of walking around, but you know, he's going hard every single time he does anything, you know, within the paint or around the top of the key. And guys show it different. Yeah. But you have to have that whenever you're going into something, you know, for golf, that 30 seconds into a shot, for basketball, whatever it means, you got to, you know, you have your moments where you're not really into it, but, you know, whenever the ball's in your hands, you got to make it, you got to make the most of it. I mean, that's bottom line.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In sports like baseball and golf, where they're so, it's just a game of millimeters, you know, and I feel like those guys are way more calmer, just because if you start to lose focus or you start to really get like, you know, thinking about other things and getting in your head and angry, you lose those millimeters that you need to kind of make up and hit that perfect shot or hit that ball. Dude, we ask everybody this question at the end of every show, and outside of the 55, what is your all-time favorite sports memory? It could be you playing, watching, anything, any sport ever. It doesn't even have to be golf.
Oh, gosh. Favorite sports memory. Honestly, you know what one of my favorite ones was? It's not a good one, but JP's going to love it, my brother.
Yeah.
It's probably – I just think it's the funniest thing in the world. But Haha Clinton Dix was taking back a punt return in the Sugar Bowl in 2014.
Okay.
And my brother got duped out of his shoes by Haha Clinton Dix.
Okay, so I like that. I can take that.
And it is the greatest. I mean, the punt came back. The punt came back for block in the back. But my brother tried to, like, he was going to, you know, I'm in the stands at the Superdome. And I see Haha coming straight at my brother, and I'm just like, oh, this is just not going to go well. Because my brother, you know, he's an athletic guy, but, you know, putting on all that weight, I could tell that it probably wasn't going to go very well. And he got juked out so bad. And that was just such a funny moment. We were so happy that it came back, that didn't happen. But I think JP will enjoy that one right there.
Mm-hmm.
But I love that moment.
I can't wait to go find that and send that to him.
You can probably find it somewhere.
Oh, yeah. I'll look hard enough. Don't worry. Do you guys, before you let you go, do you guys get competitive? Because I'm sure you give – I know him, and I know he's a fiery, competitive guy. Mm-hmm. Do you love just absolutely giving him the work on the golf course, knowing that he can't hang?
You know, we haven't actually played that often together that much, because – at OU, you know, he's always wanted to take up golf, but, you know, being a bigger guy, it's just, it wasn't really in the cards at OU. But he did give me, whenever he moved out to LA, he gave me a call and he's like, bro, I need to learn golf. Everyone out here plays golf.
Yeah.
So I got to somehow learn how to play golf. And so in the future, we're definitely, whenever I go out there to visit him and I bring my sticks, I'm going to give him a couple lessons, and we're going to get him right on the golf course, 100%.
Get him right, butter him up, and then just smoke him. Like that's a brisket, right, dude. That's awesome. So funny. Well, dude, we're going to be pulling for you and following your career. Super pumped to have you on, of course, and congratulations on that amazing, amazing day. Looking forward to having many more of those for you, man.
Hey, appreciate you guys for having me.
Of course, man. Absolute great time. Alexander Hughes, ladies and gentlemen, look for him on the PGA Tour sooner rather than later. Awesome, dude. Awesome show. Really, really nice, down-to-earth guy. Super modest. I would have been all over social media, telling everybody, calling people I didn't even know, to tell them about the 55. And that's why I'm not a pro golfer. There you go. It's a gentleman's sport. But excited to see what Alex does. We are certainly pulling for him over here at the Charity Stripe. And you guys should be too. Follow his career. High hopes. If you could shoot a 55, you can do anything in golf. And that's just my opinion. Take it or leave it. Before we close out, though, our favorite sponsor of all time. I'm not even ashamed to say it anymore. Opa Seasonings. Go to opafoods.com. Use the code THECHARITYSTRIPE. Get 10% off all your seasonings. They got the meat blend, the chicken and fish blend, which I used tonight on our fish. I had tilapia and salmon. It was delicious because of Opa Seasonings. They have the salad seasoning, and they also have the vegetable seasoning. It's all really fantastic. I told you guys in the last show I've been eating it raw. Again, I wouldn't lie to you, as weird as that sounds. I just like OPA seasonings that much. Go to opafoods.com, use the code THECHARITYSTRIPE, get 10% off of all your OPA seasonings. And to the fans out there, drag both feet inbounds, swing on a full count, rip that puck, hit that putt, hit your PKs because they free and hit your free throws. Why, guys? Because they are free. We out ya. We love ya.
We sitting here, I'm supposed to be the franchise player, and we in here talking about practice.
5 seconds left in the game. Do you believe in Bellicose? Yes! High fly ball in the right field. She is gone!
Play clock at 5. Pass is intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Gives it to Jenkins for the championship. He's going for the corner. He's got it.
Bases loaded. Two out.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.